Welcome to the My Canine Coach podcast, a show that coaches dog owners on how to achieve their ideal lifestyle with and for their dogs. You'll hear from Canine Coach Dana as she breaks down actionable dog training protocols, explores current dog training trends, and shares insights from her own experiences owning and working with dogs. Now, here's your host, Canine Coach Dana. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the My Canine Coach podcast. I'm glad to hear that you're listening in. I'm your host, Canine Coach Dana, and I'm joined by my sometimes silent co-host, Loki, who's my Bohemian Shepherd, who for right now is asleep, and hopefully he stays that way. For today's episode, you asked, so I'm answering. I had a lesson recently where we were talking about tools that we can use to help this pair of owners, this couple, teach their dog to pull less on walks and more specifically to keep the dog moving when the owner wants to keep going. They have the classic dog who stops when it wants to and then refuses to keep going. Do you have a dog like that, or do you know anyone who's said that their dog does that? It's something that I hear actually quite often, and it's super frustrating for owners because they'll be on the walk and all of a sudden their dog will just sit down and just won't budge because the dog wants to stay right there for whatever reason. And if you have a big dog, it's really hard to get them moving again. With small dogs, it's an easy thing to overcome because you could just simply make them keep going just by the sheer size difference between the two of you. But this particular owner has a golden retriever and she just can't compete with the dog on a strength and just sheer like weight level between the two of them. So when the dog stops because it wants to watch something, or it stops because somebody's nearby and it wants to say hi. And so it stops in hopes that if it just sits there, the person will come over and say hi. So, which is adorable, but it can be very frustrating if you're just trying to be on a walk with your dog and every time you see a person, your dog plops down and sits and refuses to move. It just becomes a dead weight. So we were talking about tools that can help us better communicate with her dog on walks so that she has a way of giving her dog feedback as to whether it's doing what she needs the dog to do or it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And there are a few tools that I'll typically use for a situation like this. Prong collar, slip leash, or star mark collar are usually like my first three go-to options. And so I went into detail for them explaining how these tools essentially help level the playing field. Before, they were walking their dog on a harness with the leash clipped to the back of the harness, which this type of a setup, if you put your dog in this type of a setup and go out on a walk, this stacks the deck in the dog's favor because what were harnesses designed for? Pulling heavy things. That's why they were created, so that dogs could pull loads of heavy material or whatever it was back at that time for the people that owned them. So when you strap your dog or you put your dog in a setup like that and then you go off on your walk, your dog is in a position that allows them to express their maximum power against you. That's what the harness is designed for. It's designed to allow the dog to optimally exert the most strength in its ability to pull something. So when you're on a walk with your dog and you're connected to them like that, you're the equivalent of the load or the sled that they would have been pulling years ago when the harness was first created. The different collars that I mentioned distributes that leverage more evenly. And depending on the tool, that leverage may be more in favor of the owner. So now they actually have an ability to make the dog continue walking if they need to. Whereas before, the dog was in control over what they did and where they went on a walk. And so just so you know, for the sake of this episode, I'm giving a very like high-level overview of what these tools do. There's so much more to these tools in terms of how they help you communicate with your dog and help you teach your dog not to pull you all over the place. If you're listening because you want a full breakdown on how I use these tools to do that, you can go back and listen to episode 8. That one was titled Pulling on Leash. In that episode, I reveal how you probably actually taught your dog to pull you. You probably accidentally taught them to do that. And I also give you the exact steps on how to use these different types of collars to get them walking nicely with you again. So go listen to that if you're more interested in the why and the how. But stay here if you're more interested in this question of, can I stop using tools? So after my explanation to the owners on how these collars work and how we'll be using them, they asked me a question that I've heard many times, which was, do we have to use this collar forever? And I always have a hard time directly answering that question, just like shooting from the hip and answering immediately, because in my experience, I've found that although many people ask this question in the same way, like it's always worded the same, there actually are two different reasons behind why they're asking it. So the question not isn't always what they're actually asking. They just end up asking this one in place of the one that they really want to ask. So there's kind of like two camps that people fall in. The first is that some people ask it just genuinely to know if they're going to need to use the tool on their dog forever forward. And they really aren't emotionally tied to the answer that I give them. They just want to know. And if I say yes, forever, you're going to be using this collar, they go, okay, thanks for the info. And that's really all they were looking for. If I say, nope, we're going to move on from it at some point, I get the same response. These people are asking because they just are looking for more information. They're looking for the facts. But then there's this second group of people that when they ask this question, they do truly care what answer I give them. These are the owners who are secretly asking because they want to move on from having to use this collar at some point. And they're asking more so in hopes that I'll say, no, it's not forever. We'll graduate from this tool eventually. So they actually have a desire to not use the tool. So really, their question is a way of telling me what their goal is or how they may feel about a particular tool. And regardless of which group they're in, my answer typically is the same for all clients, but there's a couple layers to it that I have to think through first before I answer. So when I first get asked this question, I always take a pause, because if it's the early stages of me working with a client and I'm not as familiar with who they are as an owner yet, it's really hard for me to figure out which camp they're in. And I'm trying to do that assessment to figure out how I want to go about answering the question. Most of the time, my answer is typically the same for all of my clients, but there's multiple layers to it, and how I answer the question is going to be different depending on which camp these owners are asking from. Are they just sincerely looking to know, hey, is this a tool that we should use forever forward? Okay, cool, great, got it. Or are they like, no, I am totally fine with using the tool to do what we need to do, but I would like to graduate my dog from having to be walked on that at some point. And really, I'm looking for you to say, yeah, that's possible, and we can work towards that. So if you ever ask me that question and you notice that I hesitate at first, it's just because I'm trying to assess which group of owners you fall in. What category do you fall in? That's going to help me answer the question better for you. And so I'm just trying to assess that first. But like I said, most of the time, my answer is always going to be the same. The way I explain it is going to be different, though. So what I want to do for this episode is to unpack the layers to my answer, because this is a question that I come across a lot. It's something that comes up frequently. In my podcast, I like to use as a resource for my clients so they can go back and listen to things that we've talked about in lessons. If they need a recap on something, or if they've graduated as a client, they can always go back and listen to episodes to refresh their training. So I use the podcast as a resource for my clients. Obviously, it's used also to just educate my non-clients, just the average pet owner who's listening. So for this episode, I want to use this as a resource to my owners who are commonly asking me this question. And so to do that, what we're going to do is I'm going to unpack the layers to my answer so that you guys can get a better understanding of why I answer, what I answer, and what goes into my answer. All right, so layer number one is an assessment of the temperament of the dog that I'm working with. So if I'm working with a dog who's incredibly exuberant or who loves to test boundaries, like that's a personality trait of the dog, or it's a trait of the breed that I'm working with, then I'm going to check that box in my head mentally, and I'm going to be leaning more towards saying, yes, you will use this tool with this dog forever moving forward. I'm not ready yet to then answer the question, but that's the first check mark on my list of, yep, we've got a dog who's extremely exuberant. Maybe that's because of age. Perhaps they're anywhere between, you know, 7 months to 3 years old, and they just are this ball of energy. They want to go, go, go. They want to explore a lot of things all the time and get into stuff. So like a younger age dog, that's a dog that's probably going to need the help of this tool, especially for those early years. So I'm going to check the box on that. Or we just have a dog who, like I said, really likes to test boundaries, and that can come as a personality trait. You could have a dog who likes to be pushy, who likes to see what they can get away with. It's just something that brings them good feelings. That's what they love to do. And so we can have dogs that have personalities like that, where I say, yeah, this dog, no matter what we do in terms of consistency, they're always going to want to push boundaries with you and push your buttons. And so relying on a tool like this to make sure that you keep the behavior where you need it to is going to be something that you're going to have to use with this dog, you know, for most of or the rest of its life. So that's layer number one. I'm assessing that. Not all dogs check either of those boxes. If they don't check either of those boxes, then I'm going to be leaning more towards saying, hey, no, you probably won't have to use this tool forever. Once we get the dog comfortable on it and they understand what their expectations are or what your expectations are, then we can probably graduate to something else. So that's level one. Level two, I start weighing my answer based on the capacity of the owner. If I'm working with an elderly person or a person with certain disabilities, then typically my answer is going to be, you're going to need this tool for the life of this dog or for however long you own this dog. These types of tools allow people with limited physical ability to walk their dog nicely because, like I said, they kind of even the playing field in terms of who has more control during the walk, who can make the decisions and ensure that the other person follows through on the decisions that they've made. In my example with the owner who's walking the dog on a harness right now, the dog is making the decision in that moment to sit down and it doesn't want to move. And it's using its weight basically to ensure that the owner follows through on the dog's decision to sit there. These other tools allow the owner to say, hey, no, we're going to keep going. I'm going to make this decision that we keep going. And the tool allows the owner to insist that the dog adheres to that decision. So physical capacity is something that I weigh in answering that question. And the third and final level that I work through is the owner's capacity to stay committed to the training and their competency with training. And that competency, I mean their ability to absorb knowledge and information, process it, understand it, and repeat it, as well as a skill set. Do they have the physical skill set to use these tools in the way that they would need to in order to then graduate from using them? In terms of training commitment, what I'm considering there is how likely is this owner going to be able to maintain consistent training 24/7, not just when I'm there, not just when they need the dog to behave, and not just when they feel like enforcing the training or doing the training. How likely is it that they're going to be able to say, yes, I will commit to training this dog 24/7 in the way that I live with it, not just when the mood strikes me? In order to graduate from using a tool, the dog that we're working with needs to know exactly what we want them to do: forward, backward, sideways, upside down, in the store, at the park, on the street, at the party, in the backyard, around other dogs, near cats, when cars go by, if a kid is playing with a soccer ball. You get my point here. Only if the dog truly, truly knows it, then the tool is no longer necessary. It becomes obsolete because we've gotten the behavior that we're looking for. The dog knows how to do that around all of life's encounters and distractions. But in order to get to that level, it requires a massive amount of dedication. So when I get asked this question, I'm sure that owners see me hesitate because I'm weighing all three of these levels in my mind, and I don't want to discourage them or make them feel like they're in any way going to let their dog down or anything of that sort. I'm just trying to give them an honest assessment and set realistic expectations with them. But here's the thing. At the same time, I always want to say, yes, you're going to use this tool forever. And that's because part of my answer is also tied into my personal belief. I'm, as a person, not a risk taker. And I've said that before on this podcast, but it's just simply not in my nature. It's not part of my personality. I accept that. My husband, Andrew, makes fun of me for that all the time. More so, he actually gets frustrated by that than he makes fun of me for. But I'm certainly not going to take any risks when it comes to the safety of my dog. And these tools are our connection to our dogs. If that rare, entirely unexpected situation arises, that one fluke scenario that we didn't train through, if that comes up, I'm going to be happy to have the tool on my dog and have the ability to help them through it. A dog is only going to be capable of doing exactly what you ask them to do if you've trained through that situation in the past. But the world is entirely uncertain, and training is lacking in its ability to cover every single possible scenario that could arise over the course of your dog's life. So knowing that those unexpected moments are on the horizon for us, sometime, somewhere, I keep the tools on my dog, my personal dog. So talking about Loki here, he's still sleeping. He is an off-leash trained dog, which I off-leash trained using an e-collar. For most of his commands, I no longer use the e-collar to get him to do them. He'll walk next to me in heel. He'll come to me when I call him. He'll drop into a down whenever I ask him to, no matter how far away we are from each other. But I'm never going to leave my house without his e-collar on if I intend for him to be off-leash. I'm never going to wager that my training is going to be good enough to leave my safety net at home. His safety is just too precious. And that one time I leave my tools at home could be the time we encounter a situation that we've never faced before, and it all just goes to shit. Now, Loki is a little over 2 years old, and you just heard me say that he's mostly off-leash trained. Most of his commands I don't use the collar for to help him complete. Now, I work with Loki every day for anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. That's every day. Raining, snowing, freezing through you, wind. Every day we are outside doing training together. And he's still not perfect. I still have to use the tools sometimes. So when I say commitment, I mean it. I don't say all of this about how I work with my dog to gloat about the fact that my dog's off-leash trained or that our training commitment is the best there is. That's not the point of me saying all that. I say it to give you a serious example of what commitment it takes for the dog that I own. Now, your dog may be easier to train. Your dog may be a little bit more difficult to train. They may struggle more. That certainly depends on the dog that we're working with. But even still, it will take a commitment of training every day on purpose and maintaining the training in the way that you live with your dog 24/7 to graduate from tools. Training doesn't stop when the session ends. I know I just said that I work Loki every day for 30 minutes to an hour. That's when I'm being intentional with my training and I'm specifically working on one or two things. The rest of the time that I'm with him, I'm maintaining the training though. In the house, I'm not intentionally setting up specific training scenarios, but I am following through on what I expect of him and how I expect him to behave 24/7. Training doesn't stop when the session ends. Most of what your dog is learning about your expectations of them and what their responsibilities are is learned by how you live together and how you interact throughout the day. So I want you to ask yourself, can you follow through 24/7 and be honest with your answer? Is that something that you could commit to? If it is, then I'd happily say, yes, if you would like to graduate from tools, we can. However, the caveat to that is that I'm always going to ensure there's some sort of backup on that dog. We may graduate from a prong collar down to a slip leash or a slip collar with a little short 1 foot tab loop hanging off of it when your dog's walking near you. But you're never going to walk your dog naked, as far as I'm concerned, because I always want to have that safety net backup. And even if you are asking yourself this question, can I follow through 24/7, and you're being honest and you truly do know yourself that you will commit 24/7 to the training, the next question that you also need to ask yourself is if the juice is worth the squeeze. And this takes us back to episode 13 on idealized dog ownership. If you're asking your trainer this question because you want to graduate from the tool, you should honestly ask yourself if that's something you want to do because you sincerely want that, or because social media or your neighbor or your friend convinced you that you should want it. If you sincerely want it, then ask yourself if it's worth the work. Is the commitment to the training worth the outcome? If you just want a dog to keep walking with you when it stops on your walk, do you really need to do all the extra stuff to graduate from the tool that solved that problem for you? I don't know. You'll have to tell me. And I don't want to discourage anyone from pushing their training and themselves to be better. I love those owners. They're my absolute favorite owners to work with. If you're hearing all of this and you're still wanting to graduate from using a prong or a slip leash or whatever the tool is, and you're a diligent, driven person, then let's fucking do it. I'm here for it. But if you're asking in hopes of me telling you that moving on from this tool is doable without thinking about everything that goes into doing that and whether you really want that, then we're going to set ourselves up to go into working through something without the right expectations. So yes, we can graduate from using a tool. I would be honored to help you do that. But most often, I'm going to tell people, no, you're going to use this tool forever forward. This is the thing that got you the result that you wanted. If you hammered in a nail successfully, would you then throw away the hammer for the rest of the project because you want to graduate from using something to something else that requires a little bit more skill, is harder to handle, and leaves a little bit more room for error? That's an extremely simplistic analogy for this topic. It doesn't really do justice to everything that we just covered, but simple analogies are sometimes what people need to hear to put all the pieces together, put that final piece of the puzzle in to solidify their understanding of a situation. Tools help us achieve the outcomes that we're looking for. That's why they were invented. Dog training and dog ownership would be exceptionally difficult without them. We can put in the work to no longer need to rely on them. But if that's what you're looking for, ask your trainer this question. If that's the goal, that you could be able to walk your dog around on a prong or a slip leash or whatever and not need to use that tool during the course of your walk, that's really what we're looking for. That's what most trainers are trying to achieve for you. But the tool stays on your dog. Ideally, what happens is I teach your dog to walk nicely on a prong collar, if we're going to use that as our example. And after practice and a couple sessions and you diligently following through with your training homework, we end up with a dog that walks next to us for the course of the walk, unless told otherwise, unless they're told that they can go explore and do things, because we do incorporate that into our walks too. We don't want a robot dog that just has to walk in step with us for an hour. That's boring. It's boring as shit for the dog. But if we get a dog who's capable of doing that and we no longer need to use the tool to ensure that they stay walking there, that's the goal. The prong collar is still on their neck. The leash is still attached to it. You're still holding the leash. It's just that you're on a walk now and you don't have to use that tool to get the outcome you're looking for. The dog just knows it. So to me, that's a graduated dog. That's a dog that understands with clarity what it is we're asking them to do. But it's also a dog who has a tool on it that would allow us to keep them safe. So if they do try to dart into the street after a squirrel, we're still connected to them. We still got our leash attached to some sort of collar on them. And we still have a way of getting them back into sync with us after a snafu moment like that, where they just completely check out and they want to go do dog instinct things. We now have our tool to say, hey, remember, this is what we're supposed to be doing. Oh, the dog goes, right. Got it. That's what we're supposed to be doing. Okay, cool. And then we're back to our walk now where we're not using the tool anymore. But I'm glad that I had that on there so I could make sure that the dog was A, safe, and B, I could get us back into rhythm. So to me, that's graduated from a tool. That's a dog who has clarity about what we're asking them to do. We can also graduate in a different way where we level down in terms of tools. So we could start at a prong collar, graduate down to a subtler feel of a collar like a star mark, graduate down to an even more subtle feel of a collar like a slip leash, right? We can graduate down from those things too. That's possible. If that's what you're looking for, we can do that. But again, you have to agree with me that you'll maintain consistency, you'll put the effort in and put the work in, and you'll do that over a long period of time, because it does take a really long time for us to work through all those random scenarios that I listed before, the kid playing with the ball and the car going by and the bicycle and all that kind of stuff, right? We can't facilitate that at every single training session, and the dog needs to practice under those situations over and over and over again to get really good at them, right? You practice shooting free throws more than just one time to get really, really good at them. So in order to graduate down to more subtler tools, we need to put a lot of practice at whatever tool level we're starting with before we can graduate down. But if you can be consistent, if you can be intentional about training, then let's do it. Ask the question. We as trainers need to know these things so that we're staying on target for you. We're there to help you reach your goals. If one of your goals is to graduate from a tool, whether that means in your mind graduate as in you still have the tool on, but you don't necessarily use it, it's just on there as a backup, as a safety measure, or you're like, I actually want to graduate down to a more subtler tool, you should ask us that. But then you should also be open to discussing it. Hopefully, or really ideally, you're working with a trainer that you trust the answer that they give you. Even if it's not what you're hoping for, you listen to their reasons and you come to a decision together that's best for your dog and best for your lifestyle. It should be a discussion between the two of you. You should hear each other out. I don't put this episode out there to deter anyone from asking this question because as the trainer, I need to know what your expectations are. I just want to make sure that I'm laying it all out there for you so you understand entirely where my answer is coming from. It's not something that I'm going to just leap to a yes or leap to a no. There's a lot of different levels of consideration that I go through in order to answer it for you. And I hope that you're willing to listen to that. Obviously, you are if you're still listening to this episode right now. Hopefully, this podcast episode serves as a resource for anyone who's thinking of asking this question to a trainer that they're working with, or they've thought it before but were too afraid to ask the trainer because they were afraid of what answer they were going to get. Perhaps they didn't think they were going to get the answer that they're hoping for. I'm glad that I put it out there and put it together. It may not be your cup of tea. It may not have been the answer that you were expecting, but those are all the levels of consideration that I go through when somebody asks me that question. Ultimately, is it entirely possible to graduate off using tools? Yes, it certainly is. There's a lot of work that gets thrown into being able to do that, but it's certainly possible. If you want to do that and you are committed and willing to put in the work, then we'll do it. I have no qualms or problem with it. I am going to say, though, that you're going to keep something on that dog in terms of safety. If you want to know more about how to walk a dog nicely on a leash, go back and listen to episode 8. Go back and listen to episode 13. Both of those will illuminate some of what we talked about here today. I know I didn't really give you the answer as to how I helped the owner overcome the dog that plants itself on the walk, but if you listen to episode 8, that'll help you. If you don't know what I mean by idealized ownership, go back and listen to episode 13. That one seemed to hit everybody in the feels a little bit. That was a lot of the feedback that I got on that. I had a lot of listeners tell me they had these kind of awakening moments or thoughts about how they view training or how they think about the way that their dog behaves and acts and what degrees of training the dog has under its collar. I got a lot of positive feedback on that one, so go take a listen to that one. And if you could do me a solid, post this episode to your story. So if you're on Instagram, post it to your story. If you have a Facebook, post it to your story. It's you guys who helped this show grow, and I'm so grateful for every one of you who listen in. Last week, we actually hit a milestone, and we broke 1,000 downloads, which is honestly just incredible. So let's keep that going. Let's get the show to 2,000. Share this to your story. If you'd like to get in touch with me about training or to give feedback or to ask me a question, the best way to do that is by visiting my website, mycaninecoach.com, and requesting a consultation, or by sending me an email at caninecoachdana@gmail.com. Both of those are listed in the show notes below. You can also join the Facebook group for the podcast if you're looking to connect with other cool dog people or crowdsource information about dogs. The link to that is also in the show notes. If you want a direct connection to me, you can subscribe to the email list on my website to get updates on all things Canine Coach, get training tips, alerts when episodes drop. And for my email list people, I send a newsletter in the middle of each month that recaps all the major points of that month's podcast episode. So you don't have to go back and listen to the full episode to review the major highlights. So you can jump on that if you want those emails. But most importantly, please share this episode and then go like and write a review of the podcast to help the show grow. That's it for this episode. I'll see you next time. Loki and I are going to go do some cool dog stuff.